Hi there, I'm Justine Sullivan, a yoga teacher and yoga student and yoga enthusiast, someone who's slightly obsessed with yoga and a healthy obsession, I hasten to add. My podcast series started off with an introduction to yoga. Then we briefly touched on philosophy, lightly skimmed the surface on that. And now I'm doing what is Rocket. So today I'm joined by two Rocket yoga teachers and students of Rocket yoga founder Larry Schultz, and we're going to talk about Rocket yoga. What exactly is it? So welcome, ladies. If you could just take a moment to introduce yourselves. So if we start with Amber Jean.
Hello, my name is Amber Jean, and I'm one of the most experienced Rocket practitioners and teacher training facilitators. I've been offering Rocket trainings and classes for over 20 years and practicing the Rocket that long myself. I am based in the United States in Cincinnati, Ohio. I've been teaching at my studio. I opened a Rocket studio in Cincinnati, Yoga Ah, and I've also been traveling around with Rocket trainings for the past about 7 or 8 years, offering the Rocket trainings abroad.
And Amy, if you could just quickly introduce yourself.
My name is Amy Fulton. I taught in London. I've been teaching Rocket yoga in London since 2009, and I was in San Francisco from 1999 to 2009. I remember practicing in San Francisco and hearing Larry say, Amber Jean, at the time, she was already way more serious than me. So, I was a lawyer a long time ago and from Alabama, and I had a long, long way to go. And, but I did also, like Amber and I both, we were upstairs It's Yoga people. So we were in the early days before it moved to the bigger center. So I've been doing it a long time. I definitely have not taken it anywhere to the level that Amber has as far as like teaching or practicing goes, I'll be honest. I'm actually like really thrilled that Amber and I are now like friends. We've been hanging out and talking together for the last over a year now.
Cool, lovely. So let's just go straight in and ask, what is Rocket yoga? Who should we go for? Who should we go to first? We go to Amber Jean. Brief description in a nutshell. But
I'm gonna use one of Larry Schultz, who is the creator of the Rockets, description of the Rocket. And he called it a science of sequencing poses while observing oneself through breath, bandha, and drishti.
Amy, do you want to add anything to that?
I love that Amber just summed that up. I mean, it's obviously vinyasa yoga, and Ashtanga really is the original vinyasa yoga. But Larry did always, he loved that it's a scientific sequencing of breath and movement, you know, and it's true. And that it is a yoga that is informed by, you know, the ancient wisdom and ancient practices, but it's also open to evolving. You know, it's obviously it's based on Ashtanga yoga, if that's the question that you're asking, like what style.
Well, if someone was to go into a yoga studio and saw Rocket yoga on the timetable, what would they expect? A kind of fast yoga, a slow yoga?
No, absolutely. It is one of the faster. I mean, Ashtanga yoga is the original power yoga or vinyasa yoga, which is a breath and movement linked practice, which is what Larry meant by the scientific sequencing of moving and breathing, because it really is all about moving deliberately and taking deep breaths while you move. But it's definitely faster and it's more fun.
Any good for total beginners? Amber, what do you reckon?
I can speak from my personal experience. One of my first classes that I ever took was Rocket 2. And I just thought that that's what people did. I thought that was... that was what everybody was doing. I never considered a differential between beginner and advanced yoga. I just knew I was going to a yoga class, and it happened to be Rocket 2. So I kind of just jumped into Rocket 2. I felt like maybe more like a noodle in there. I really couldn't do many of the strength poses. And that's what kept me coming back, is because I noticed that the Rocket added in so many supportive strengthening moves that I started to see the results in my practice. So as a beginner jumping right into Rocket, I mean, it was really perfect. You just have to kind of calm your ego down a little bit and learn from the students that have been practicing longer than you. And that's what Larry would call the system, is the Montessori school of yoga, where beginners, advanced, and intermediate students all practice in the same setting. And we all learn from each other. Even the advanced students learn from the beginners. It's really an interesting dynamic that happens in a Rocket.
Well, I was kind of laughing because when I actually came to It's Yoga, I did not go straight into the Rocket too. So in the upstairs space at It's Yoga, there was a 7:30 beginners class. And there was no separate room. There was a shoji screen that divided the space up. And I attended those beginner classes, which were essentially the modified primary series, but the hour long version. And I attended those until I was politely told that I needed to go to the other classes because I'd learned everything that I could. But that being said, it was still like kind of compared to what other styles of yoga were offering. It was definitely more fast paced and livelier. One of the things that Amber and I are here trying to kind of balance out is we're trying to bring back the original like basic sequences that are invigorating and inspiring, but not unapproachable. So I think that Rocket has loads of room for creativity, but I think the initial creativity that is important is the allowing creativity in the sequencing so that each person can embrace what they need to in their practice.
How did the Rocket get its name? And is it the Rocket or is it Rocket Yoga? Is there a difference?
I mean, I'm pretty sure Larry would have laughed his ass off it. I think it was called both. You know, like one of Larry's favorite jokes to make was really actually about the name of the studio, It's Yoga. You know, he used to love, like, he'd throw out a bunch of different questions, you know, and then like, and the answer to all of them was It's Yoga, It's Yoga. Like, what gives you all the fun? It's Yoga. What does this? It's Yoga. And so I think whether it's Rocket or the Rocket is kind of irrelevant. But cool. So Larry used to, he was practicing with Patabi Joyce and he was coming back to California and a group of his students were happened to be the Grateful Dead. Everyone's heard of them. And they were in San Francisco, obviously, and they wanted Larry to write down like, you know, what he was teaching them. And like one of the things that was happening is that the California teachers were coming back from India and they were modifying the practice, the straight up Ashtanga practice to suit their students. And so once they wrote it all down, you know, Larry was asking Bob Weir, apparently, especially of the Grateful Dead, you know, what should we call it? And he said, call it the Rocket because it gets you there faster. It is definitely a speed up to slow down kind of practice.
Briefly back to who was Larry Schultz. So Larry Schultz was obviously a student of Patabi Joy. Patabi Joy is the founder of Ashtanga Yoga. Him and Krishnamacharya put together the Ashtanga Yoga sequence. And so Larry was a student of Patabi Joy. So had he gone to Mysore? Had he gone to India to practice? Or had he met him in America? How had he met? How did he meet Patabi Joy?
Do you know, he did actually study extensively with Patabi Joyce. And I think I'm going to throw this one over to Amber, who knows way more about the Patabi story than I do.
So Larry Schultz was practicing with Patabi Joyce, and Larry, I believe he did go to India, but Patabi Joyce was also coming to America, and he was instructing a group of students down in Austin, Texas. And it was a small group of students, and Larry was one of those students. And, you know, Patabi Joyce would come and they all would have this incredible experience with studying with him for maybe a month. And then Patabi had to go back to India. And so when Patabi left, everybody started sitting around saying, well, now who's going to teach? Who's going to teach? And Larry goes, well, I'm going to teach. And the students and his yoga friends, they said, you can't teach. And he goes, why not? And so that really is what sparked Larry for starting to give Ashtanga yoga a language. He was one of the first yoga instructors to open a full yoga studio in the United States. He was a very much a forward thinker. This was before there were yoga studios on every corner. Larry had a studio, and he also had set up one of the first teacher training programs and had a vision for the world is only going to be a better place if I teach a lot of people to instruct yoga and share this practice. So before, there was teacher, there's so many teacher trainings available now, like literally thousands if you Google them. Back then, when I did my training, there was only two, and there was only one, right? Two. And so I had to fly to San Francisco to take my teacher training with Larry. And then once I met Larry, it was just like I got the juice, I got hooked, I fell in love. And I never looked back after that. I've just stayed with the Rocket practice ever since.
Why was Larry called the Bad Man by Patabi Joy?
Well, there's a couple different answers to that story. One was he was the bad man because he was rearranging the sequences. He was taking the traditional primary series, second series, and third series, and he was mixing them up and resequencing them. So he was very bad man for doing that. And Amy, do you want to tell him the other bad man story?
I mean, are you referring to how long it's going to take him to like get to his place? Well, I mean, Patabi Joy like used to say like you would give people a different timeline for how long it's going to take you to find your way in the world. And so there's a story that Patabi Joy pointed to one student and said, "Oh, 3 years, you'll get there. You 5 years." And he looked at Larry after probably a couple of other people and said, "25 years, because you bad, bad man." That's one of the things Larry really did is he, like whatever somebody said was a flaw, he embraced it and he really like showed you how, it's the yin yang symbol. Like somebody says this is bad, the other side of bad is good. And yeah.
So back to how it got its name. So why did Larry change the sequence? Why did he change the Ashtanga sequence? And did he change it for the Grateful Dead, or did he change it and then the Grateful Dead changing it? Amy, you have your hands up.
Yeah, okay, so this is one of my favorite topics just because like if you look at the history of yoga and it kind of goes along with the Industrial Revolution. Don't worry, I won't go back that far, but essentially like yoga like religion, it it's meant to be a living thing and meant to be kind of experience. And one of my theories is that because you did not see the same evolution happening in England, for instance, if you look at in the 1970s, 1980s, early 1990s, what was happening in the yoga community in England was the exact same thing that was happening in India. And partly that is a geographical location. So in America, you had all the teachers from California and well, anywhere in America would go to India and they would stay for a long time, but then they would come back to America for more extended lengths of time where they were confronted with real students. And I think that this goes back though to the original lineage of Krishnamacharya. Because if you look at Krishnamacharya, I mean, he is responsible for Iyengar and Patabi Joyce. He really was the original, like, take this one structure, like there's only one definition of the asana, sthiram sukham asanam, get steady and be easy. And they and applied it to like what people need. And I think that in the West, and especially Larry was he was groundbreaking, but and he there were a couple of other people though that around that were doing the same thing. But a lot of them, if you look at it, they practiced with Larry. So we could make the argument that like every form of vinyasa flow, power flow, all started with Larry because he really was one of the first people to say, as Amber said, why can't I teach it? And why do you have to wait until you've been, like if it's useful and necessary. And one of my favorite jokes that Larry would always say is that even Patabi Joyce doesn't do it like Patabi Joyce used to do it. That was when Patabi was still alive. He used to say that joke. And so I do think that it is an acknowledgement of the value of the structure, but also recognizing that, yoga's alive, like people are alive. So,
So, but what made what? Why did he mix up the sequence? Because I mean, I've been
because he was because he was confronted with real people. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're confronted with an actual person, like, so for instance, if I go to a Mysore class in London, I get kicked out after a seated tree or Dhanushrasana that had Tini because I can't go on. And so Larry, instead of, because that sequence, that primary series sequence, was developed for Patabi Joyce, who was a 13-year-old boy when he met Krishnamacharya, and he had no physical ailments, and he needed direct channeling of that energy. There was nothing else that he needed to address. And Larry was dealing with real people who were way older than 13, had many musculoskeletal as well as psychosomatic, whatever issues, mm-hmm. you know, going yeah. on. And so instead of sticking to like script, kept the same structure and, you know, said, oh, what's the one that would you really need? And like, if you look at the primary series and the second series, the backbones of second and third series Ashtanga really are much more relevant to what we need in the West with all of our sitting in chairs. And so I think Larry just went on an intuitive, he was very intuitive.
Yeah, no, it makes absolute sense. His poses in series three that become enablers for series one, and the same in series two.
I feel really lucky. I was never a dancer. I was never coordinated. I'd only done a little bit of yoga in Alabama at like a YMCA. And I never came into yoga with any pressure on myself because I couldn't touch my toes. I watched Amber practice last week and I was like, oh my God, she's doing a drop into Titi Bhasana. I was like, wow. I was like, I've never done that. And I will never, ever hope to do that. But you know, Amber and I, like, we're both doing the same yoga. That's the cool thing.
So I used to work for quite a lot of rock bands in the 90s, and it just makes me laugh because I can't imagine any of them wanting to practice yoga. Did the Grateful Dead, were they really into their yoga then? Amber, do you want to take this one?
The Grateful Dead heard that Sting was traveling around with an Ashtanga yoga instructor. So they had put an ad in the Yellow Pages specifically for, or they found Larry's ad in the Yellow Pages specifically for Ashtanga yoga. So they definitely had an interest. Now, it was mostly Bobby Weir and Phil Lesh. There's some funny stories about when they were on the road and Larry was trying to teach Jerry Garcia the nollies, because as some of you may know, Jerry Garcia had a big belly. And so Larry was thinking, what am I going to teach Jerry? What am I going to teach him? And he thought, oh, I know, I'm going to teach him the nollies. And the nollies is a yoga technique when you pull your abdomen in and you pulse your belly in and out. And it's supposed to create this internal fire and burn up toxins. And so Jerry's like writing a song, and Larry goes into the room. And he goes, Jerry, look at this. And Larry like goes over to Jerry and starts like doing the nollies. And Jerry like looked up at him and he goes, who is this guy? And Jerry said, get him out of here. So it wasn't so much that Jerry Garcia was doing the rocket. But I did hear from the tour that Larry got a nickname of Nolly. And so on tour, Jerry would say, look, there's Nolly over there. And later on, that became the word Nolly, is part of the inspiration of part of Larry Schultz's philosophy called Nolly Land.
How did you two get involved in the rocket then? So were you practicing rocket somewhere else and then found Larry? Or how did you, what drew you to the rocket, and how did you find Larry?
I was pretty lucky because I had a yoga instructor in my hometown, Indu, who's a Sanskrit scholar and studied a lot of yoga back in the 60s. She had found Larry Schultz, and she told me about Larry, and she showed me his script and showed me his teacher training program, and it was just very clear for me. And she came up to me. I had taken one of her classes, which was The Rocket. It was called Mixed Level. And she said, she goes, you're gonna go take teacher training with Larry, and then you're gonna come back here and teach for me. So she introduced me to Larry, and I flew out to San Francisco and lived at the studio for a month. I just, I've been blasting off ever since.
I don't think everyone like possibly realizes how cool Amber is. Like I flew into San Francisco on the Ides of March of 99, and I think I was in its yoga's beginner classes straight away. I remember like hearing Amber T, like she lived in there were chains hanging from the ceiling of the yoga studio with the platform where Larry sometimes slept, Amber slept. San Francisco back then was like a place that's unfathomable. We were all drinking the Kool-Aid, so like right after the 2000s, you were surrounded by people like Amber. My father had passed away in December of 98, and I had finished law school. I'd passed the Alabama bar exam. And so I moved out to San Francisco, took the California bar exam. I'm not a lawyer, obviously. And like I said, I quickly found It's Yoga. And I remember the first class that I took. It was an immediate, the way that I felt was spectacular. And then, actually like going back even farther, because I Googled like yoga studios. And like Amber was saying, like Larry was the first place. Like there was one other Ashtanga studio way out in the sunset, which is kind of far out from where I lived. And so I went and knocked on the door of It's Yoga, the first one, this girl Kelly, who ended up opening up a studio in Canada. But she opened the door and she's like, "I'm so sorry, we're closed." But she was so nice. And I immediately like wanted to be just like her and do whatever the heck she was doing. She was oozing happiness and positivity. And I signed up for Larry at the time. He had the 90 days for $90. Which I'm thinking about bringing that back, Amber. I kind of feel like we should bring that back. It was an encouragement and like a recognizing that it's a pattern and a habit. So that's how, and I was hooked immediately, and he said it would ruin my life, and it did in the best way.
Do want to just go back a little bit and just say, how I had heard about Amy and for years, and how both of us were dancing around each other during a very special time at It's Yoga in the late 90s when the Rocket was first blasting off, and the classes would sometimes have up to 60 students, and everyone was just practicing together and having fun falling out of poses. It's just been really fun to reconnect with like my Rocket sister after all these years, and for us to be kind of bringing the Rocket in a way full circle from where we started and began our practices, or at least seriously getting into our practices. And we've just like stayed with the Rocket all these years later, and here we are 22 years later talking about the Rocket with you. So that's pretty cool.
Is the Rocket still Ashtanga? Is it still based on the Ashtanga sequence? I mean, what do you say to people who say, oh, no, it's moved on a lot since then?
As far as like the Rocket being Ashtanga, I consider the Rocket Ashtanga, but you have to see, my perspective is different than Amy's, because my perspective, I've mostly been teaching in Cincinnati at my studio Yoga Ah, so I've been able to be the quality control and delivering the Rocket similar to the way that Larry taught it. Of course, things are going to evolve and change, but when you're practicing with the Ujjayi breath, and you're focusing on your drishti and you're focusing on the bandhas, for me, those are the elements of Ashtanga yoga, more than just specifically primary series sequencing and making sure you do all the vinyasas. So from my perspective and kind of the way that I've been instructing it is I very much still consider it Ashtanga, and I'm very interested to hear like all the different points of view about it.
Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree with Amber. And I think that one of the nice things about talking to Amber is realizing that we have both, because Ashtanga yoga, like Ashta is eight, it's the eightfold path. And like getting into that it is asana, it's pranayama, but it's also without having to go into a full yama and niyama description. But I mean, it's how you show up and it's consistency, and it's living it and doing it, as that famous Patabi Joyce quote of it's 99% practice, 1% theory. And to be honest, I think that the fact that Amber and I are now like super besties, I'd say the fact that Amber and I have come together after, all these years, if you want to know what is Rocket Yoga, this is one of the things that Larry would say, yoga brings you things that money can't buy, us coming together right now, doing this podcast, this is the yoga. And this I think is the Rocket Yoga. And one of the things Amber and I have talked about is how, whatever our practice looks like, we've consistently shown up. And I'm absolutely fascinated by the burgeoning friendship between myself and Amber and you obviously, Justine, but that's happened over the last couple of years. And I think the timing of it, this is the demonstration of yoga, it is people coming together, people who are whole and connected. So I think that is the practice of Rocket Yoga, really is, it's a classic ancient practice helping you to find yoga, the connection of union with yourself. And then also realizing that that's the same thing. When you're studying yourself, you come together. So I think the Rocket Yoga is this conversation right now.
What makes Rocket Yoga the rocket? Is it not just a power yoga class? How does it differ from a dynamic flow class? And who gets to call what they're teaching rocket?
So I just like to start with, where the rockets started, Larry Schultz. From my school and my training is if you studied with Larry Schultz and he instructed you the rocket and he showed you the way of the rocket, then call it Rocket Yoga. Because I've seen people offering Rocket Yoga and they call it something else. There's two different sides to this. Is sometimes I see people doing Rocket and they're not calling it Rocket. And then sometimes people are vice versa. So I think if you study with Larry Schultz, call it Rocket Yoga if you're instructing Rocket Yoga. If you study directly with one of Larry Schultz's direct students and they showed you the way of Rocket Yoga and you're following those sequences, call it Rocket Yoga. So that's my most basic perspective on it. And beyond that, I don't want to be yoga police. I don't want to play police officer and have to monitor what everybody's calling everything.
For me, the rocket really is about the tempo and the kind of the pacing. And yeah, there are a couple of signature moves. It starts, it's sun salutations, streamlined standing poses, throwing in those inversions, following that Ashtanga sequence of if you're adding on stuff at the end, it does sort of relatively follow the Ashtanga flow of first, second, or third series, ending with finishing postures. There's definitely a pacing and a structure. And I think it does follow Ashtanga. And I think that Rocket is not just slang for creative vinyasa.
So how important is it that it remains true and respectful of the lineage?
I mean, I have strong feelings about this. I think on one hand, Rocket is all about creative exploration. On the other hand, one reason why it is successful is that people know what they're going to get and that it is a tried and true tested formula that's accessible. Like Amber was saying, Larry always said it's a scientific sequencing of moving and breathing. And I do think knowing kind of what you're going to get and also the, like I said, the accessibility, I think is a big thing. But really also the transformative power. Sorry. I was spacing out thinking about Amber, her practice the other day. I was watching this TT Bhasana thing. I can't get out of my head every time I look at you. She floats into TT Bhasana.
I float into TT Bhasana in my dreams.
Yeah, me too.
It's just not happening. When I used to ride horses, I was told I rode like the queen with a really straight back. It's not my fault. That's the way I was built. My back doesn't bend. So TT Bhasana is not really available to me. Amber, you've been talking a lot about sequencing, about taking it back to the original sequencing. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I want to agree with Amy about how in the rocket and the rocket sequencing that you know what you're going to get. So it is specific sequences. And then within that structure, the rocket offers lots of modifications and creativity. The Rocket is a philosophy, and that philosophy embraces function over form within the specific sequences. So every Rocket routine, you're going to start with the sun salutations. And Larry had a fun way of teaching those sometimes. Sometimes he would speed them up. Sometimes he would slow them down. Sometimes he would say, focus on the shoulders, and we'd have to do all these double dip chaturangas. So even with the sun salutations, he taught them with a Rocket philosophy of, okay, we're going to change the way you put your feet in chaturanga. Okay, we're going to change the pace. And that's what he also did with the standing poses and the seated poses. So yes, in San Francisco, I mean, we followed the routine. We did have places where we would add in the abdominals and add in the handstands and the arm balances. But it was pretty straightforward. And I think that one thing that Amy and I are noticing that newer Rocket teachers are maybe introducing is more of the tricks and like trick poses and things like that. And that really wasn't what the Rocket was about. There was some people at the studio that could do more of the fancy stuff, but a lot of the Rocket was just having fun jumping back and forth, you know, and falling out of the poses.
So when you talk about your sun salutations, for me, it's almost my favorite part of the class. Surya Namaskara A, 5 of those. It sets up how I'm going to practice. It tells me what kind of body I'm working with that day. I adore Surya Namaskara B. I love it so much. And when I've practiced with you, Amber, I like the way that you've slowed it down or focus on your hands or your thumbs or sort of one bit that you take it in, and it really becomes extremely special to me. And for me, the sun salutations are crucial because without them, I don't move so good. And I remember watching one of the things you sent us before we did your teacher training. You said even steel bends when it's warm enough, and it's like that rings true to me. When I do my sun salutations, I warm up and then I can bend and I can move. Variations on sun salutations. Are we okay with that in a Rocket class? Or are they, I mean, I'm not on about slowing them down or feet wide or feet narrow, but how about not doing them at all? How about doing not straightforward Surya Namaskara A and B?
Usually most people need a warm-up for the Rocket practice because the Rocket is built on momentum. And so you do want to have that heat. You do want to create your ritual of starting in standing and then, you know, or starting in standing with sun salutations and then slowly moving through the dance until you end up in Shavasana. So it's all part of the ritual. And, you know, and that's one reason to take the training is, well, how far can you vary the sun salutations where it's still Rocket?
Yeah, for me, if it's not broken, don't fix them. Do you know what I mean? I love them as they are. But I did a Rocket class a couple of weeks ago, and there was no straightforward sun salutations, and it really threw me because they went into quite a challenging arm balance, almost straight off, and I was like, well, I can't personally move or do that until I've warmed up.
I've been studying this repeatedly because I get lazy just like everyone else, you know, and they're like 5 A's and 5 B's. I think that like for everyone, they can be repetitive, but I do think that that is part of the meditation of the practice, you know, like getting through that sense of like the mundane of every day. And I think also I find it takes 10 to 12 minutes to get your body warmed up and to get your mind into the groove. I will admit to playing fast and loose with the Surya Namaskars, but when I do 5 A's and 5 B's, I have a better practice.
The sequencing is really important because the Rocket is meant to be therapeutic. So with Rocket 1, you know, we're doing elongating poses, we're opening the joints. And then with Rocket 2, we're practicing back bending, twists, more abdominals. So within the system of the Rocket, we're finding balance. And I think that's why people love coming to Rocket classes, like Amy said, is because they kind of know what they're going to get like, oh, I'm going to take a rock at one. There's going to be a lot more leg variations. There's going to be a lot more forward bending. And then on rocket 2 day, you know, they're feeling the excitement of, hey, today's I'm going to be able to get into more arm balances and work on my back bend practice. And so you're setting specific times during the week aside for each of those routines. That's why the sequence is important, is because it's a system. Larry would say that a lot. It's a system. So you can't just have one rocket. You know, you have to have the rainbow of the routines. The rocket one, the bottle rockets, which are little mini rockets for day on days that you don't have time for a full 75 minutes. And then the bottle rockets are also great for beginners that are just learning the rocket, because they take under 60 minutes. And so that means a beginner can have less endurance and still be able to rock it.
If a yoga studio had, say, three rocket yoga classes on a week, which one would you think would be the best sort of all-rounder? Because I personally love Rocket 3. It kind of like says everything to me when I do Rocket 3. But yeah, if you had to
Okay,
put like
what? Okay,
three.
name dropper. Sorry, I had to unmute myself. Name dropper. Oh, I personally love Rocket 3. That's awesome.
What do you mean? I thought you were about to say,
What
I thought
do you
you
mean?
were
That's like,
about,
oh
what?
my
I
God, did you
thought
like,
you were literally
oh
about to
my
say,
God,
I've just
okay.
bumped into Tom Cruise. I thought
Oh,
you were about to say
no.
that.
Okay, sorry. I had to call you on your, like, I love the Rocket 3.
Is
I
that
love
not,
the
why is
Rocket
that name
3.
dropping?
Oh, it is 100%.
Well, I don't know,
But
maybe.
that is also, that's part of the fun of the rocket. Like, the rocket yoga is all about, like, people like us, like normal people, like learning to, yeah, I can bust out that move. So anyway,
It
sorry,
just,
I'm
but
muting myself again,
no,
but
I love that.
I had to say.
As you're in Soho, I thought you were literally going to say, I've just bumped into Sylvester Stallone.
If they could offer 3 a week, why not practice the system and offer rocket one, rocket two, and rocket three? Or you can also call rocket three mix level, because it's mixing up the poses and adding in poses from rocket one and rocket two. And so that's something just to know about the rocket, is it's not about like one is easier and three is more difficult. They all go together. So rocket one, two, and three, they're just three different routines. Rocket three has the most poses, the most variety. And so that's always going to be a well-balanced practice. And
Yeah, so I wasn't name dropping. I was just proving how well balanced I was
how
with my.
hardcore, you're hardcore.
I just,
How
okay, listen,
well
I
balanced
worry
and
that,
into
like,
variety.
listen, I just don't like it. Like, I like the beginner mind. Like, you know, like when people think, like, Rocket 3, that's the hard one. And,
No, I just
you
like it because I
know,
like all the different bits, and also the different
yeah.
bits in there, and they work better for me as a stiff yogi.
Yeah, no, well, I think second and third series, I find as well, the forward bends make my back hurt. And so I know what you mean. And I was mostly teasing.
I mean, I've been spoiled. I've been trained by Amber Jean, and I've obviously trained with Amy as well. At yoga school last year, which was so much fun. I practiced Amber Jean's happy hour the other Friday evening. And I was like, why can't we do that every Friday? And then I was thinking, well, why don't yoga studios offer happy hour on a Friday evening?
Well,
Amy, can you speak to someone about
I think that's what
that?
part of Amy and I's mission is to bring back some of these rocket traditions, like
Yes.
in San Francisco. Like Rocket 3 was practiced on Fridays as a happy hour, and it was our happy hour yoga class. So for 15 years, I never went it to like a bar, like a alcohol bar happy hour. I had no idea what it was, because in my whole yoga career, I always was in the yoga room on Friday nights between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m. Because it would start off with opening the studio, facilitating a Rocket 3 class, and then if we were in a teacher training weekend, the teacher trainers would stay after the class just to do a question and answers and review the schedule for the weekend. And so, yeah, Amy and I, we're ready to bring it back, the system.
So what plans have you got in place, and what can we see? So we're currently in May 2022. So what's coming up? What's the future hold at the moment in the UK? So let's talk about the UK, because we are mostly, Amy and I are based in the UK, and also there's stuff happening in the UK. So what's happening in the UK?
Well, the big news is that I'm going to be traveling to England in June to offer rocket training, and Amy's going to be assisting me. And the training is hosted by Tri Yoga Shoreditch, June 12th through the 19th. Amy and I are going to kick it off with a workshop on the art of sequencing on and off the mat. So we're going to kick it off with that, and that's something that Larry would talk about is, sequencing not just these routines, but how are we sequencing our week? How are we sequencing our month, our year? How are we sequencing our life? And, when you figure out your sequence, it opens a lot of doors to happiness and peace. It's when your sequence goes out of order that you start to feel all confused and discombobulated. So we're going to be offering a workshop, and then the big training. So the training's going to be part one and part two. Part one is going to focus on rocket one and bottle rocket, and then it's going to go right into part two, which is going to focus on rocket two and rocket three. And I was suggesting that if you can take the whole all of the offerings just to rock it through from the workshop all the way through part two. But if you can only take or pick and choose what you can take whatever you can.
Is the workshop part of the tri yoga thing as well, the art of sequencing, or is that something you're doing separately?
It's part of Tri Yoga,
Okay.
and it's happening the day before we start the training, so it's kind of like a gathering of energies. We're working on getting some live drummer to come in to kind of, it's like we want to stoke the fire. We want to get the drummer, we want to get the drums going and get the energy going as a celebration to start the training.
And I suppose in many ways emulate what was going on in San Francisco.
Absolutely.
Because I can imagine it. You describe it so well. You describe it so well with the I can just feel the heat, I can smell the incense, I can hear the loud music. I've just got really crazily into the amazing tunes, all these amazing mixes that Marcus Vader does. Because he obviously mixes them to go with the breath, and it's almost like I'm in a trance. It's like the music for me is as important as the practice. It's a happening. Does that sound silly? Yeah, I'm really looking forward to you coming over. And it'd be great to be over in Shoreditch, actually. I've not been to Tri Yoga Shoreditch.
Really looking forward to being in Shoreditch. This is actually my fourth visit to England to facilitate rocket trainings. So my first one was in 2016, and I facilitated a training in Brighton. And then my next one was in Shoreditch. And then I got invited to Tri Yoga Camden back in October. And we only offered part one rocket training. And so now on this fourth visit, the offerings are expanding. So that's really exciting because now we have the workshop, we have the part one and part two, and that's all happening. So yeah, it's gonna be a really great time for everybody to come together. And I mean, to be able to have Amy assisting, and I feel that we both, like us together, even during this podcast, have a nice balance. Because sometimes Amy can be a lot more logical, and she can be like a really good fact checker about some of the history of yoga and, the lineage of Krishnamacharya, which of course we both practice, and then I kind of bring in the more of the kind of the Larry Schultz, bringing in a sense of humor, a couple of the fun Larry stories, a couple of the fun Grateful Dead stories. So I feel that together is very powerful. And also women in the Rocket. We are like the first women facilitating and offering Rocket teacher training. And so we're breaking down those walls.
How important is it for you to make sure that Larry's legacy remains alive? Because it's very obvious when you talk about him just how dear he was to you.
Larry was my best friend, and he was my mentor, my teacher, and he was very much like a father figure to me. After Larry passed, I began doing a lot of writing and research on the Rocket as part of my processing and mourning. And what I discovered is Larry was our alpha. He was holding us all together while he was alive. And without Larry, the only thing that's as strong without Larry is the Rocket practice. And so the Rocket practice is really where the legacy is. And so by sharing the Rocket, sharing the teachings, sharing the stories, Larry's spirit can live on. And so, of course, that's very important to me because I loved him very much. And he was just an incredible person. He had a way about him that he could get anybody excited about yoga, and he had a way of making you reach deep down in yourself to make big changes in your life to become happier. He also was very inclusive. He treated everybody the same, from his millionaire students to somebody who came in with the only possessions they own was their backpack to do teacher training. He treated everybody the same. And so he broke down the hierarchy with his students. And yeah, so, I'm just hoping to, continue that. And I call it the Rocket Love, share the Rocket Love.
Oh, you certainly can feel it. Thank you. So we've got the rocket, we've got the training in Shoreditch. Is there anything else you've got coming up you want to mention?
The whole month of May, Amy and I are co-instructing on Zoom. And so it's at 4 p.m. London time. Every Sunday in May, we're going to be facilitating the classical rocket sequences and breaking those down. So this is on Instagram, but it's mostly for, you'll get the link by DMing us, direct messaging us on Instagram or email. Instagram at Rocket Yoga Academy website, and Gmail is rocketyogaacademy@gmail. So pretty easy to remember. And Justine, when you hear me say the word facilitate, everything is very purposeful, right? Because we're yoga people. Larry made us say that we would facilitate the practice because he wanted to take down that hierarchy of bow to the guru. So instead of saying, I'm going to teach you, I'm here to teach you Rocket One and teach you Rocket Two, the Rocket philosophy is I'm going to facilitate this training and I want to empower your inner teacher and your experience of the Rocket.
I think you're an inspiration and it's very lovely to spend time with you again. I certainly felt completely unsullied at the end of the last yoga training with you, just walking around in this envelope of love.
I'm really excited to see you in person again, Justine.
Yay.
And
I'm going to sign off. So thank you so much. It's been really lovely to connect with you.
thank you, Justine. And thank you, Amy, for joining us.
Yes, thank you, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me on. You can find me on Instagram at Amy from Alabama. but you'll never be able to spell Amy. So good luck.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I just want to make sure I've got that because I didn't want to just lose you and then be like, Amy, we didn't say
yeah.
But is there anything else you want to add?
I think the main thing that I want to add is that, like, right now in London, if you happen to be in London, like, this is the renaissance of Rocket Yoga. Everybody is down with it. And Amber is coming here. And I personally think that the fact that Amber and I are friends and doing stuff is the perfect example of why Rocket Yoga is awesome. For me, it's really all about Amber and you and all the actual living people. So like Larry always said, Rocket Yoga is about the things money can't buy. Like, it's friends, it's having a good time, it's sharing, it's learning, it's being excited and being interested and interesting. And I find Amber incredibly interesting, and I can't wait to see what happens next. I think you're incredibly interesting. I think that there is now no better opportunity than right now to do yoga.